Welcome to the game.
It's a beautiful thing.
With Mark Duffield.
By golly gosh.
The son of a darkened shearer and a self-described ball-playing jack-of-all-trades.
We shouldn't be surprised, should we?
Who lit up footy fields in the southwest before becoming WA's preeminent AFL scribe.
My goodness.
And Glenn Quarterman.
Wow-wee.
A proud Victorian parked permanently in the West who would have played 300 AFL games if not for his incredibly small hands.
Goodness gracious me.
Together, they are Duff and Quarters.
You know who.
And this is your favourite footy podcast.
It's unbelievable.
Hello, everybody. It's time for the Duff and Quarters podcast. We are brought to you by Tab Touch. Get closer to the AFL action with Tab Touch. Please gamble responsibly. Please call the Gamblers Helpline on 1800 858 858 if you're running into any difficulties. In the studio, we have our spectacular producer, Josh Garlop. We have Mark Golden Tonsils Reddings. We have the man with very small hands, Glenn Quartermain. And we have myself, Mark Duffield. And we're talking about round 13, and we're talking about the departure of Nathan Buckley after 27 years at the Collingwood Football Club. Guys, woke up yesterday morning thinking I was having a day off and realised very quickly I wasn't. What did you make of it all?
Extraordinary. Something funny has happened to my microphone, has it?
Can you just try that again, mate?
Yes, hello. That's
better.
Okay.
No sudden movements.
Right, we're obviously editing that out. Yeah, it's really weird, isn't it?
It might be a headphones or connection with the headphone or not. I think we gave Josh the tag of extraordinary just a fraction early.
Just no wiggling.
Okay.
What do you make of it?
I felt for Nathan Buckley. I thought it was the honourable exit. I thought his performance at the media conference was very dignified, very humble, which is in keeping with my expectations of him. I think it's been a successful partnership. What, 10 years as coach, 7 years making finals. And my enduring memory of Nathan Buckley will be 2018 grand final, walking out onto the ground before the game and consoling the head of the cheer squad when their banner broke. I just thought that said a lot about the bloke.
Also consoling the runner after the game who had felt he'd gotten in the way of Jaden Stevenson when he was running to trying to intercept that ball that Elliot Yeo marked and kicked for a goal.
I think we'll miss him, certainly in the short term. I've got a suspicion that he's not lost in the long term. I hope he's not, but I'm sure whatever he goes on to do will be successful.
The question I have is, and look, whether he put his hand up to go or not, it's what is the immediate future of selecting a coach with the board still very much in limbo? Mark Quarter was a notable absentee through this process in many ways. We know that Robert Harvey's taken over, but gee, it's still a lot of murky water for Collingwood to get
through. Yeah, but it'll be a football decision. And Graham, they've got a very good person at the club now in Graham Wright, and he will be driving this. So I'm pretty confident that the decision will be made in good faith by a pretty good match, a coaching selection committee.
So sad, though, that he's going out on Monday. Traditionally, it'd be the MCG, and that would be the romantic way. Certainly, he may well resume his career somewhere else, but that would be the way to go. It's just a bizarre set of circumstances, which means he's going to be in Sydney.
So there were some honest conversations that took place a week or so ago between Nathan Buckley and Graham Wright. The conversations were about where Collingwood's lists were at and what sort of commitment they would need from the coach. They wanted a coach that was going to be there for more than 2 or 3 years. Could they say that Nathan Buckley was going to be there for more than 2 or 3 years? The answer is at this point, probably not. If Nathan Buckley were to get a contract extension at the end of this year, it would probably be for 1 or 2 years, I would imagine. They didn't want that. They wanted, basically, they feel that Collingwood's list is in need of a bit of regeneration. So they wanted a coach who was going to be in for the long haul. The other thing was obviously why now. And Buckley's initial position was that he would want to coach the end of the season. And then they asked him, do you really want to, like, given what that's going to mean, if this leaks out that you go on at the end of the year, do you want to put yourself in that position? And then mutually they came to the decision that it would be better to coach the Queen's birthday round and then go after that. I suspect a factor in Buckley accepting that was the circumstances that people are playing football under now. Like, you go back a week, the obstacle course that the South Australian government and the AFL had to put in front of Collingwood for them to get that Adelaide game played was pretty severe. Buckley has separated from his wife last year. They did it early last year before the hubs, but they announced it later in the year. Clearly, he wants to re-engage with his kids. Clearly, if he gets caught out of Melbourne in a hub situation for a long period of time at the end of this year, that's going to be a lot more difficult. So I suspect that probably played into him being more accepting of the decision. But that is it in a nutshell.
And off the back of that, I think when people say, look, Nathan's suggesting I want to put the footy club first, I genuinely believe that he and others might say that, and there's other avenues around that. I genuinely believe that he has decided, yep, whether it was a tap on the shoulder or not, that this is the best move going forward. That the interesting one here is Collingwood's got such a history of wanting to attract the big name, whether it was Malthouse going back in the 20-odd years ago, then, of course, Buckley, Lee Matthews before all that. Mm-hmm. So they're not a club that generally picks up an assistant coach, and Sam Mitchell stands out as the most obvious, I think, at the moment, is the most high-profile assistant coach. But have they got the skin to sit down and say, look, we don't have to get a Clarkson, which they won't get by the sounds of it. Won't get Harwood.
Don't rule that out. Mm. I mean, there's 10 weeks to go. There's a lot of water to go under the bridge there. Clarkson has said, you know, history says I'll be here. But there's still conversations to be had by Hawthorn, I would imagine. Like, what happens if Sam Mitchell makes noises about going? And then Hawthorn has to make a decision. Well, is Clarkson going to be here for the next 10 years? And then if he's not, should we be making the change now? So I think there's a lot of water to play out under the bridge. And as Ross Lyon said on Footy Classified last night, he said, if Alistair Clarkson's available, put on your glasses.
Yeah, I'm just reading into Clarkson, and the history does tell you when he says, let history be a teacher, he's right. This happens a lot whenever there's a coaching change.
But there's two sides to this, yes. Quarters. What if the Hawks go to Clarko and say, we think it's time?
It'd be a brave broad.
I don't think that's going to happen. No. I think it'll happen on his terms. Well, it should be the end of next year.
Eventually it happened with Kevin Sheedy.
No, it will happen, but I think he's contracted to the end of next year. Hawthorn board is not going to Clarko and saying it's time.
No, I agree.
In the short term. That's not going to happen.
Funny things happen at footy clubs.
But the caveat is, if they have a plan in the next 2 or 3 years for Sam Mitchell to take over, and that that is just a furphy or my in my head, they will start thinking, well, if Sam goes – Clarko, 2-3 years from now, what's their plan B? So that is in the discussion stuff, but I don't think
Sam's going to Collingwood. I think they're going for – I think you're right. I think they go for a bigger name. Oh, but not that he's not a big name, but someone with the –
Established. But there's not many around, let's be honest. I mean, apart from Ross.
So you're saying Ross Lyon.
I think he's the most likely, and he has already indicated they want to talk to me, I'll talk to them. I think he's the most likely. It depends, I guess, on whether Ross wants to coach Collingwood or whether the Carlton position becomes available. I mean, that's an interesting discussion. Who would you rather coach?
Carlton's problematic for Ross, I think, because Ross has tended to take lists that are at least half established. Mm-hmm. In fact, both these clubs.
No. Well, Collingwood's a half-established list.
Yeah. There's things there that you'd like about the list, that he would like about the list, but there's things there that he doesn't like about the list. They don't call him Ross the boss for nothing.
He wants to be in complete control. And I can tell you right now, he's far more chance of coaching Collingwood than he is at Carlton.
Yeah.
And only because we know that Buckley's gone. Teague is still, according to the president, he's still the coach. Yeah. And look, you've got to sometimes trust the board, although that's fraught with danger, but I tend to think that Collingwood the most likely option. But why is it that blokes that have been there and have failed are suddenly cast as being failures forever? Michael Voss, Justin Leppich. Is there – in AFL, it just seems if you have a failure at one football club as a senior coach, you've got a line put through you for the rest of your life.
So I think it even goes deeper than that. I think that how we define failure in the AFL is completely wrong. Mm. So let's say Buckley does his 10-year tenure – at Collingwood, and one thing changes, one moment changes in that entire 10-year.
He's a legend.
Dom Sheed misses.
Yep. Coaching legend.
And Collingwood hang on, and Buckley becomes a premiership coach. He's signing a contract. He's in for the next rebuild, and he's still there.
Yeah, look.
And Adam Simpson made this point at his press conference this week.
Today.
He basically said, one moment changes, and he said, this is a different press conference.
Mm.
And he said, I was at the press conference today. He said, we could be talking about essentially me being out the door, so to speak.
Don't forget, though, Lee Matthews was appointed a coach for life after they won in 1990.
The president, Alistair.
Alan McAllister.
Alan McAllister.
That is ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. But it was a throwaway line made.
No. Yep. It is ridiculous that one moment over 10 years determines whether Nathan Buckley is defined as a successful coach or a failure.
So
I think en masse you're right. I think those of us who look at it a little deeper would dispute that. But, yes, you're right. I think that history will be unkind to him in that fashion.
But, hasn't that changed their decision, moment?
I'm not sure if that's changed their decision.
It's changed the path of history, absolutely, because, as you said, the contract, everything, that's 2018, 3 years ago. Absolutely, he's locked away. But then if you're going to ask the question, is Buckley a success or a failure as a coach, I think Ross Lyon is a successful coach.
Yep, me too.
But he does not have...
As is Nathan Buckley.
Doesn't have, and Ross even more so, given where he's been to and just missed. It doesn't mean you're a failure, and I think that's the point you're making.
And the only thing I would have about Ross re-entering is I think Ross has to make some shifts in his philosophies and his game plan to re-enter because the game has shifted.
He couldn't do that at the back end of his tenure at Fremantle, though.
I know. This is the problem. Like, Ross was, I think, tactically the most astute coach in the AFL, possibly even more so than Clarko. Mm-hmm. But he publicly and privately said, I don't coach skill, I coach effort. And he talked about playing both sides of the ball, but the reality is he was a defensive coach.
So you don't think he's smart enough to adapt?
Well, he may be, but I think he would need to convince people that he's made those adaptations. If Ross the Boss 3.0 at Collingwood is going to be Ross the Boss 2.0 as he finished at Fremantle, I think there's danger in them going there. One, he has to embrace skill execution because it's too big a part of the game now for a coach not to. Now, he will say he did, but the reality is that his private and public utterances on this were, I do not coach skill, I coach effort. And you get good at the things you value and you get ordinary at the things you don't value. And by the end of his tenure at Fremantle were dead set ordinary at skill.
Mm. Can you quarters in a coach, and let's go to that sort of same genre of coach, Michael Malthouse going to Carlton, Dennis Pagan going to Carlton. Now, the circumstances may well have influenced the results. In fact, they did to a large degree.
Alan Jean's going to Richmond.
Yeah. Do you think that sometimes the game can pass you by? We're just talking about Ross, and not saying it's passed him by, but is there a time where if you've had a year or two out like Ross has had, that it's pretty tough to pick up the threads or not?
Well, I think if you're smart enough, you can adapt to anything. Look, it's interesting. You look at the older coaches. You look at the NFL. You look at the EPL.
Yep.
There's a lot of coaches in their 60s in those competitions, yet we tend to steer away from that here in the AFL. I'm going to throw a left fielder at you. What about Mark Williams, who's now the assistant at Melbourne, coached Port, has a little bit of skin in the game at Collingwood. They played over 200 games at Collingwood, I believe.
And so he has skin in the game at Melbourne at the moment. If you're looking for one of the significant things that's changed at Melbourne over summer, it is that Mark Williams came on board. We thought Simon Goodwin would be a coach under pressure. We had question marks over Simon Goodwin's game plan. There's not much to question about Melbourne's game plan right now.
Mm. Is Mark Choco we know he's been a successful premiership coach. Is he now more that development side that you think that's where he's going to be pigeonholed?
He'd need to be asked that question. Possibly he is. I'm just throwing his name out there as a possibility because if we're throwing all these other names out there and people have mentioned Chris Scott, you're talking Vosses, Mitchells.
Brad Scott is another one.
Brad Scott, both Chris and Brad Scott would be worth talking to. You'd have to talk to him.
Brad Scott has spent time at Collingwood, so he understands the club.
But I would say in that sense, Mark Williams would have to be, at least speak to him.
Okay, so what about the next class? So we're talking about Sam Mitchell. Mm-hmm. What's the next class of young coach coming through that would be?
So is Robert Harvey out of the game? So he's going to be the caretaker coach.
To me, I don't understand what they're going to know about Robert Harvey in 10 weeks' time that they don't know already.
Well, nothing. He's just a pure caretaker from the way I'm looking at it.
And he's been, dare I say, the bridesmaid too many times. The concern is, and this can happen, we've seen it with Paul Roos at Sydney, if they bob up and win 6 of 8 games or something, you know, the masses will start trying to engineer.
Ask Terry Wallace about that one.
Exactly, yeah. Well, that's what I said, Paul Roos at Sydney.
Had the job, yeah.
All right, so a big week at Collingwood. it was great that Nathan was a last time out winner when he announced this. I'm not sure he's going to go out a last time out winner, given what's ahead of them on Monday. But
a big game too. Let's not forget that's the big freeze game. So if you haven't already, get your beanie. Very important cause, motor neuron disease. So go out and get a beanie, please. Support it.
Absolutely. Great cause. And one of as great a person as Neil Danner has been in footy, and let's not forget he was the assistant coach that unlocked Carlton Centre Square set up in 1993 that paved the way for that grand final demolition, took Melbourne into preliminary finals and grand finals as well.
And absolutely. And the cause, sorry, Duff, to cut you off, the cause, MND, and I've got a family member that is going through that at the moment. You've got a really good mate.
My best friend.
So, and I don't think we're going to get in trouble for briefly talking about how many struggles. And look, we see Neil Danaher, and obviously in my head you think, well, he's deteriorating slowly, but that MND can absolutely get hold of you within 18 months, 2 years. So what we're seeing publicly, Neil's probably the exception rather than the rule.
He is. It's not a nice disease at all. And g'day, Brent, if you're listening, my mate, and he's been very rapid, the onset, so
yep.
My heart goes out to him, and it's very difficult to deal with, and also for the carers and the family support networks, it's really difficult. So Neil Danaher doing some great stuff, there's some great research being done out there. You can help by getting a beanie or just donating your time or just have a look, have a read up on the disease.
And one of the great lines uttered by Neil Danaher when it first became clear that he was suffering from this: you don't always get to choose your circumstances, but you always get to choose your attitude.
Great line.
One of the great lines from one of the great people in footy.
Yep.
All right.
Let's go.
Let's move on. Let's see if we can tip a winner.
It's going to be tough this weekend. I've got some real concerns. It's a lot of 50-50 games in a shortened
weekend. I've got concerns every week, Scoot.
I know.
I'm like Leonardo DiCaprio on the raft at the end of Titanic. I'm just hanging on.
Is that before you've been in the cabin with Kate Winslet?
That's after. Okay. Pretty happy if I fall into the icy waters at that point.
All right. Port Adelaide versus Geelong in Adelaide on Thursday night tonight. Tab Touch has Port Adelaide at $1.84 and Geelong at $2. Presumably Geelong will have to be COVID stunt men to get in and out of the state, as Collingwood were last week. Power?
Oh, I think so. Only lost one at home this year. That was to the Western Bulldogs. They're going to have to improve their clearance game because they are way behind Geelong in that. Guthrie, Dangerfield, Duncan, Blissav's possible, or let's just call three, at least of three of them are going to be certain ins. So they're massive for Geelong. I'm just concerned about the whole travel aspect. I know they travel a lot and COVID, you get sort of COVID, you get used to it all, but it's just a lot of mucking around, flying back at midnight. And I just think Port at home, really important game for them. They win it. They can stay in that top four. They lose, they slip away a bit. So need to win the games at home. I think they're dependable at home. I think they can cover Hawkins and Cameron with Alira and Jonas. I'm worried about those midfield ins for Geelong, but they're going to be short of a run. So I think Port for me.
I'm tipping Geelong. I think the ins are massive. I think their record against the Power is fantastic. 15 of the past 18 games they've won, albeit they lost the qualifying final last year by 16 points. I just think Geelong, I'm not worried about the travel. It's a 50. Mm-hmm. We drive further to get home to our house. 50-minute drive for a flight for the boys from
Adelaide. Had a couple of hours on either end, and you've got the flight home as well.
All of that. If you're going to take that into account, then you're going to be second-guessing all your tips over the course of the next couple of weeks, quarters.
Which I do, yeah.
going Geelong, I think Jeremy Cameron, since he's come into that side, and he is an absolute gun, I just think he does create that excellent foil for Tom Hawkins. I think their midfield is going to really trouble Port Adelaide. Look, Port Adelaide deserve to be favourites at home given the record they have there, but I'm tipping the Cats to get across the line and maybe give myself a result on a Thursday night for the first time this season.
Isn't it interesting when you get a player like Cameron who goes into a side where you've got a genuine star forward focal point and he is not doesn't have to play that role so much, and he's allowed to play the role which he is suited to more, which is a bit further upfield. So I think that's been crucial for him and his form this year.
Port at home for me, and I agree. It's great credit to Tom Hawkins, his ability to adapt to the presence of Jeremy Cameron and become as much a goal assist player as he is a targeted player in attack. All right, moving right along. Your boys' quarters, Sydney versus Hawthorn on Friday evening. Sydney, $1.15 with Tab Touch. Hawthorn, $5.50.
Two-word stuff, Beauty Nuke.
Beauty Nuke, he's playing. You always go to the headline.
Debutante, again, yes.
Debutante. So Box Hill Hawks picked him up in the mid-season draft. Tom Mitchell, big raps. And I like the romance of this. Of course, Tom Mitchell was doing his time in, with Box Hill when Hawthorn picked him up as a rookie.
Very quickly, yep. Tom Mitchell talked that he might.
Sam Mitchell. I've got
While we've got Hawthorn, yep. Tom Mitchell, in brief, the talk is that, well, he might want to leave. Hawks might be happy to entertain a trade.
I think there
might
be some mutual agreeance there. I think if you look at all the possible trades at Hawthorn, Jago Mira won't be traded. I think Tom Mitchell is a genuine possibility, and I think he's open to it if it's a club in its premiership window, maybe a club like Richmond. Mm-hmm. Just depends on who they get back. But I think Hawthorn's looking at that now. They're looking at possible trades.
Isn't he going to be too slow to play at Richmond? I mean, that's his problem, isn't
it? He'll look at a club where he can fit in, possibly.
He's a slow left footer with a dodgy left foot, basically. I mean, he's a Brownlow medalist. He finds the ball like no other. So he can get it 40 or 50 times in his sleep.
But, could
be. But he's lost a bit of confidence in his kicking. He's not quick, doesn't cover the ground well. I'm not sure that that fits the Tigers' game plan.
Plenty of other clubs, though.
Sydney, for me.
Yeah, yep. Sydney, I think. The Hawks have lost, 9 of their last 10 matches. They've been pretty competitive, the Hawks, against Sydney, though. They've really kept things tight in recent seasons. But at the SCG, you just find that the Swans, they've got, well, they're in the top eight, and they're playing for so much more.
Only kicked over 80 points 3 times this year. Buddy Franklin, 11th game against the Hawks. Averages 2.5 against Hawthorn. 32 goals to get to his 1,000. I'm tipping Sydney.
All right, Fremantle versus Gold Coast, Optus Stadium, Saturday afternoon, 2:15 p.m. local time.
Scoot, you playing for Freo?
I'm a chance. I think I used to be right halfback. I think I'll be left right out this time.
I would play except for my incredibly small hands. Otherwise, I would be playing for Freo.
This is such a tough game to try and line up. Now, you know that.
So $1.93 Freo with Tab Touch, Gold Coast $1.90. Skeet.
A couple of big ins for the Gold Coast Suns if it's
Raoul and Sam Day.
Sam Day, and we know all the outs of Fremantle. Can they cover? Can they find a way, depth-wise, to get across the line? Now, in these matches, both teams, let's be honest, are not travelling all that well. The Gold Coast, to be fair, have had some reasonable form in the past month. In Perth, they don't travel that well, the Gold Coast. So I'm leaning towards Fremantle with no science, but just that.
Gold Coast form been that good? I mean, they've come off a bye. They beat Hawthorn, which ended a run of outs, and Hawthorn are pretty easy to beat at the moment. It's about a 37-point win. I'm not so sure. The Freo outs really worry me. Obviously, they worry me. Fife's out. Darcy likely to be replaced by Meek. Cox is out.
No guarantee Tabiner's back.
I don't think Tabiner.
Okay, so that's the one. Tabiner, he plays. I'm going to assume at this stage he plays. We haven't seen the team
yet. I don't think he will.
I'm gonna pick Freo in this one only because it's a 50-50 flip for me. I do rate the Gold Coast midfield too. Toot Miller in great form among others. But it's when it's a 50-50 flip and it's here, I always go with the home team, so I'm gonna pick
Freo. The same.
I'm gonna tip Gold Coast. I just think that the Darcy, I'm expecting Darcy not to play.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that where could Freo get him? Well, they could get him in the ruck a little bit. That might offset the fact that Fife isn't playing. To me, no Darcy. Lloyd Meek versus, you know, fairly green Gold Coast ruckman, or maybe Zach Smith, who's a bit of a journeyman. That becomes a 50-50 thing. I think Raoul gives, he's almost like Gold Coast turbocharger. I know he hasn't played a lot of footy, but he runs, covers the ground well. He will have prepared very well to come back, given he hasn't played since his last time out on this ground in round one. I think that just tips the balance in Gold Coast favour a little bit. I'm hoping Fremantle gets up because I'd love to see them get to the break 6 and 7 and then hopefully get some soldiers back after the break. But I tend to think it's going to be more like 5 and 8. I
want to see Michael Walters, given the outs, blokes like Michael Walters stand up with Nocera and Brayshaw. They've got enough quality there to still trouble Gold Coast.
The disappointing biggest is Nathan Wilson's absence through that stupidity. Not only did he give away a goal, but the suspension that was totally unnecessary. So at a time when you're ravaged by injury, you can least afford that to happen.
Yeah, right now, as a person with Fremantle close to their heart, I want to see them find a couple more players. Mm-hmm. So the thing that came out of the Dogs game for me was Tracy is a tick and Liam Henry is becoming a tick very quickly. So I like that. I want to see Joel Weston play.
Yep.
And I want to see Luke Valenti play before the end of the season as
well. So you wanted to see him play before an O'Driscoll, for example?
Yeah, I do. O'Driscoll's got time. O'Driscoll needs to tidy up his kicking a little bit. I want to see Valenti play at AFL level. Just see whether they look at it and go, okay, he's got enough that we keep on going, or there's too much ground to travel, he's missed too much footy, therefore it's not a great investment.
Any gut feeling as to whether Alex Pearce will be selected this afternoon?
I think he has to be selected.
Well, he went for a scan, by the way, early this week.
Anyway, missed, yeah,
so exactly. There's and the mental demons for him are quite extraordinary. Everyone's crossing their fingers.
Yeah, I think we all will be, won't we?
I think it's a no-brainer. He's played 2.5 games in the Waffle. He's played 2 full games. The last game he was very solid. Yeah, he had scans on the wrist, but they came back clear. To me, he's the first bloke I'm writing up on the board because there's no other tall defender in the team. Someone has to play on Ben King.
Even if he's the medical sub, given the way Frio's going, he'll be into the game at quarter time.
the captain will get injured tossing the coin. All right, so 2 for Frio, 1 for Gold Coast. St Kilda versus Adelaide. St Kilda $1.84 with Tab Touch. Adelaide at $2. Who are we tipping,
that
boys?
Cazaly's Stadium.
Cairns. I've been there. It's a great little spot. They've got the restaurant and the pokies there. And it's
where is Cazaly's in Cairns? I've been to Cairns, but not to the stadium, is it?
Yeah, it's central, very central. Okay. And it's a great little spot. It can get very windy there. We know, well, this is a night game, isn't it? So I'm assuming the dew will probably be not as big as in early part of the year when there's humidity is really high. But certainly no home ground advantage here because they've never met at Cazaly Stadium before these
two
clubs.
Well, I'm picking St Kilda on the proviso that they kick straight.
St Kilda for me, not with any great confidence just because I don't have a lot of faith in the Saints, but I think Adelaide starting to creak a bit, beaten by Collingwood last week. Collingwood haven't beaten too much this year.
This is where I've just gone left of centre. I've gone Adelaide. Mm-hmm. They've won 10 of their last 11 against the Saints. The Saints, I'll be interested to see what team they put out tonight. They have got, we're talking about injury tolls, they have got numbers that are ranging from 6 to 10 players unavailable, even more. So you're right, Adelaide have done absolutely nothing to convince me that they should be winning,
no.
But I've got them down as a speculator this weekend to knock over the Saints, who, let's be honest, we shouldn't be having this conversation about the Saints. They should be in the conversation for the 8, but they're not going to be there this year.
All right, North Melbourne versus GWS. GWS at $1.25 with Tab Touch. North Melbourne at $4.
Big ins for GWS. Toby Green, Phil Davis, Matt DeBoer, but all look like they're going to be ins. Sam Reed plays his 100th game. Big in for North in Robbie Tarrant. We hope he plays.
That'd be a great story.
Absolutely would be a great story after the worrying illness earlier in the year. I'm going to pick GWS. It's down in Hobart. I like those ins.
Oh, you mentioned Toby Green as part of the ins. They're playing North Melbourne. Enough said, Giants.
Yep.
It'll just be a balmy afternoon.
See, you keep bagging Hobart.
Down in Hobart.
Hobart is a great spot.
There'll be a slight zephyr of a breeze just wafting across.
It might even be cardigan weather. You know, just a little cardi with the woolen shirt and a singlet underneath. I reckon you could even just discard the jumper, just a little cardi.
It's hard because the puffer jacket I got for a present a few months ago in Perth, the winter coming up, as soon as you put it on here, within about 10 minutes you realise it's too warm. You just actually, I'm wearing it and just like George Costanza through the bottle shop, just knocking over stuff and not knowing exactly what I'm doing. You know the episode, don't you?
Well done for bringing Seinfeld into it.
We're always pleased when Seinfeld gets a fancy.
The puffy jacket, have you still got the ski tag on it, Skate?
No, I haven't. Oh, okay. Quarters, but thanks for asking.
Yeah, my suggestion is that you visit Kathmandu before you go to Blundstone Arena and
it's cold, but it's a beautiful
get some
city.
Gear
because it's one of my favourite cities, Hobart. I love it. Beautiful spot.
Well, not this time of year. Thanks very much. All right, we're all on GWS. West Coast, incidentally, A, is GWS the best team outside of the 8, and B, are they the team most likely to come into the 8?
Best team outside of the 8.
Yes and yes.
Yes. Team I think with the most potential outside the 8 is probably Essendon.
That's potential, but I'm talking about this year.
Yeah, I think GWS.
No question. And they've shown so much in the last couple of months that I think that if they can get those bodies back, which they are starting to do, that they can really start to make inroads. Interesting, given West Coast and Richmond currently on the precipice and on the edge of the 8, they have to be careful not to lose touch with that top group.
That probably tells you how significant that result, those results were for those two teams last week, doesn't it? And it also probably tells you that when it matters, teams like this with the pedigree tend to find a way to get it done, which means how stupid I was to tip Carlton against West Coast last week.
No, I was worried about it after the tip because, of course, I made the tip before the outs. And then I was spent the whole weekend worrying about it, but happy to see West Coast get over the line.
You know when you tip against a proven performer and at the 10-minute mark of the first quarter you know you're wrong? I knew I was wrong at the 10-minute mark of the first quarter. I just watched Carlton, the lack of urgency, the lack of an ability and an intent to defend, and I thought, this is all I
always feel like that when I tip against Richmond, and I'm tipping against Richmond this weekend, so I know I'm going to feel like that early.
I'm tipping against Richmond as well, which having sat at the Dreamtime game and just marvelled at their last 10 or 15 minutes of the game when they just went bang, bang, bang and put Essendon to the sword. I don't know. You talked about the travel, and now I'm contradicting. The fact they've gone to Sydney, coming back. We know that West Coast, invariably, they had an aberration against the Bombers. They generally play pretty well at Optus. They get Kennedy back. They get Allen back. Possibly Duggan, most likely not. Liam Ryan saw.
Shepherd out.
One thing Adam Simpson did say at the press conference today is that he's expecting there to be some more outs, a couple of outs with injury for the weekend. Who they are, we're oblivious. So you have to bear that in mind. Richmond are not far from their best. They've got a few out, but logic says pick the Tigers. I'm sticking with the West Coast Eagles. If this game was played in any other venue, but
I agree with that. Yeah,
it's Tigers every day of the week.
I'm sticking with the West Coast Eagles because it is at Optus Stadium. I'm hoping that Liam Ryan is one of those outs. Liam Ryan was feeling for his hamstring at times late in the game last week. Now, if that's come up sore, and they know there's a little bit more than just awareness there, and he doesn't play, then I'll be wishing I'd tip Richmond.
Bear in mind, Adam Simpson said pre-game against the Swans, he was really concerned about Liam Ryan. His back, he was stiff, he wasn't moving well, went out and took potentially mark of the year. So he said, look,
against Carlton.
Well, it doesn't matter. Interesting, isn't it? Four goals, and without him, they don't win probably.
With those Flying Ryan marks, where does that rate? It's probably 5 out of 10 for Flying.
Nowhere near it.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's just run of the mill.
Exactly.
It doesn't even make one of the posters in his bedroom, I reckon, that one.
And he's got wallpaper now.
Who gets does Elliot Yeo, has he got the conditioning to go with Dusty this weekend?
I wouldn't do that, but I think I was encouraged by what I saw from Elliot Yeo.
It's a build, isn't it? He's had 2 weeks back now. It's a build. Incrementally, we probably won't see his absolute best this year, but we'll see something near it.
$1.65 Tigers with Tab Touch, West Coast $2.25. All right, we're all on West Coast because it's played at Optus Stadium.
Pretty much, and that's not stupid. I mean, they do play well at Optus Stadium.
I could be 1 out of 5 this weekend.
We say that every week.
Well, I'm saying one. That's like, you know, anyone got a perfect 9 so far or a clean sheet to...
You're a glass still in the cupboard sort of person, aren't you, Skeet? You're not even a glass half empty.
I don't think anyone here has got a 9.
I was born to be a quitter, in the words of George Costanza.
You know, it's not a lie if you believe it.
Exactly. This could go on.
Monday, Nathan Buckley's last game in charge of the Collingwood Football Club, the Queen's Birthday Clash. Melbourne versus Collingwood. Where is this being played?
SCG.
SCG. That's right. In front of a mammoth crowd, this will be.
And I'm not picking Collingwood, I'm picking Melbourne. They're irresistible at the moment to pick. Great depth, playing really solid football. That back line's working so well together. Very hard to score against Melbourne. The games they drop, as they did against Adelaide by 1 point, will be against teams like Collingwood. I just think, but that's the only way I can see this falling Nathan Buckley's way in his last game. I'm pretty happy with him picking Melbourne.
So the Demons are $1.20 with Tab Touch, Collingwood at $4.60. Skeeter, use those golden tonsils, make a case for the Pies.
Well, the emotion of the day itself, now what percentage that plays, and we know Collingwood's not hopeless. They've had some very ordinary performances this year, but the victory in Adelaide, minus Brodie Grundy, shape
of the ground,
yeah, all of the above. I just think
plenty of room for him to go sideways.
Yeah, true. There's no way I'll be tipping Collingwood. I think Melbourne, until they fall over, which doesn't look like they're going to happen this year, which is full credit to them. They've been outstanding. They'll be beating Collingwood, but everyone I think wants to see Nathan Buckley, if he's going to go down, they don't get walloped by 10 to 12 goals. I think I think Collingwood owes their players, owe their coach, and I think they'll give a yelp on Monday afternoon.
You would hope so. He's been a good person, Nathan. I think he carries himself with a great deal of dignity. He's a very decent person for us to deal with.
Yep.
By football standards, we're not always dealt with in a very decent fashion.
No.
And he's been, I think, you know, he's set very high standards in that regard. He's been a great player, a good coach. Obviously, it's hard to say a great coach without the premiership, but certainly a good coach. But we'll all be tipping Melbourne.
We will, to stay on top of the table.
All right, let's move on to the Ferrell's Biggie Juice juicy topic of the week, brought to you by Thirsty Camel Bottle Shops.
Hello, Barry White.
It was all a dream.
Juicy topic of the week.
So, Skeet, you've got one for us, I believe.
Well, I know the All Australian selectors or the panel met this week to discuss the squad or look at who should be considered. And it raised my interest thinking that, look, both clubs, mid-table, got some stars involved, but obviously both missing plenty because of injury. But how many West Coast Eagles or Fremantle Dockers could you put in your side, your All-Australian side, today? And I'm not sure we can put any player in there with any confidence at the moment.
Oscar Allen, possibly. David Mundy, probably on the bench.
But David Mundy, even you look at some of the midfielders that are going around at the moment in really good touch. And the Bulldogs with McRae, Bontempelli, Libba. Mm. There's just three. Oliver, Petrarca. It's getting pretty skinny to try and fit in a 35-year-old, irrespective of how well David's playing.
Well, there's six Ds in there, for starters. Lever, May and Salem are in the back six.
Yep.
And Gorn, Oliver and Petrarca are in the midfield.
What about Pickett?
So there's six? No.
Okay. Not yet? Not enough?
Only just not, but no for me. Not far out.
Mm.
Probably the next small forward in, but no.
So who's ahead of him?
Good question.
See, I'm not sure who is.
Well, Toby Green, he's had
Toby Green
out, missed too much footy.
He's missed a bit, hasn't he?
But although he's coming back after only 2 weeks out, but he had an earlier stint out. Well, I think he's missed too much footy, Toby. I really do.
Donald Tippin Woody's had a reasonable year.
Yeah, oh,
good.
Donald Tippin Woody's probably been as good as Cozzy Pickett. Cozzy Pickett's highlights are pretty good.
Yep.
Which tends to get you a bit excited about him, but I would say, Cozzy Pickett, not quite.
Tip
almost
and Woody,
not quite.
You might sell me with Tip and Woody. I think he's been good when they've been behind. He's sort of dug in this year. So,
so is it fair to say when it comes to West Coast that Nick Nat would be, if you're singling out, putting a couple of names on paper to put forward for the Eagles, Nick Nat's probably been their best player, 12 games, 169 disposals.
Is Tom Hickey ahead of him?
357 hitouts.
I'm serious.
Hasn't kicked a goal this year.
Is he ahead of him in terms of all Australians?
I don't think so.
So Max Gorn's your number one, right?
Yes, yeah, that's a given.
Is he ahead of...
No, I think Nick Nat is... I think he's number two this season. Hickey's been good. But I think Nick Nat's been pretty good, but not all-Australian good, if you know what I mean.
So if you're picking two ruckmen in the all-Australian team, and this annoys me when they pick two, surely the second one has to be the forward ruck. And therefore, even though he's missed some footy, the ruckman in the All-Australian team as the forward ruck is probably Tim English.
He's been good down forward.
That's the role he plays.
Yeah.
But they don't pick it on that basis, do they, generally?
If you pick Nick Nat as a forward ruck and he hasn't kicked a goal, that's a pretty odd selection.
Yeah. Four behinds.
It's not always selected that way, though.
No, I know. But it's a rubbish way of selecting. And the other thing they do is they'll try and jam as many midfielders in there as they possibly can. So what's the normal balance of midfielders in a team? That's how many should be in the team, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, there's so many of them. I mean, Ollie Wines, Jared Lyons, there's a bank of players that's why others get squeezed, because they're trying to accommodate all these mids.
So Bontempelli and McRae are in, aren't they?
Yes.
They're in the team.
Absolutely.
And Liberatore would be very unlucky to
Oliver's
miss.
Oliver's in.
Oliver and Petrarca have to be in.
Hugh McCluggage has to be right in the conversation.
Hugh McCluggage is in.
Yeah.
On a wing.
We're starting.
Running out of numbers, aren't we?
But the aforementioned, you can't not have them in the side. So everyone else is in the conversation only.
Yeah.
Or on the bench.
So Mundy, at best, is on the bench. Yep. At best.
I'm mounting a case for him to be on the bench.
And what about a West Coast player? So Skeet, happy to put Nick Nat. Nick Nat's in the conversation, I think. But
outside of that, there's no one that
Oscar Allen hadn't done enough?
Do you put him ahead of Taylor Walker, Harry Mackay?
No.
See, I would argue that if Oscar had played as the forward ruck all year, you could mount a case for Oscar as the forward ruck and the support Max Gawn. But he hasn't.
Okay.
They've opted to go that way, and I fully understand them not going that way because you don't want Oscar Allen having Shane Mumford put a knee through his spleen in a ruck contest. But Oscar's role has been as the third forward at West Coast.
And down back, you've got May and Lever, haven't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And Salem, I think.
Yep.
He's,
no doubt about it.
He's in there as well. Jeez. Then you go to guys like
Tom Stewart's been good.
Tom Stewart, Stasevich at Brisbane, I think, has to be at least be in the conversation.
Stasevich for sure. Does Harris, Andrew, get in?
Oh, I think he's thereabouts, absolutely.
But where?
Does he go ahead of Jacob Wiedering, for instance? Wiedering's had a good year.
I would say Andrews ahead of Wiedering, but
he's only had one bad game from memory, Harris Andrews. I think Wiedering's had a pretty solid year.
He's been good.
Connor had a solid year. Yeah.
So in essence, I don't think we can the best we can offer West Coast or Fremantle is maybe an interchange for Nick Nat and David Mundy perhaps. Is not Mundy's hit 9 goals, 6. His form just tailed a fraction. Is that unfair?
He's got a form line that a 35-year-old is expected to have in a footy
so season. We're overlooking 5?
Yes.
Or not? Oh, yeah. Midfield.
I just think with the there's players ahead of him this year.
I think Miles ahead this year, to be honest. I mean, in kicking what's his tally? 4.15 or 2.15?
5.11-70.
Yes, it hasn't been good, but he's a gun player. But no, he's definitely not all Australian at this point.
Okay.
I tell you what, if he kicks straight, he's in.
Yeah. Well, he's at least giving him a run for their money.
It's interesting. I had a conversation with someone from Fremantle the other day, and they said if they had the average accuracy of a team in the AFL, the average accuracy, they would have only won one more game, which means they would be 6-6 and percentage from the 8. But they'd have a percentage 10 higher than it is now. So instead of a percentage of 90, they'd have a percentage of 100.
Which is a big difference at the back end of the season.
Yeah. So that tells you where a lot of the problem lies, basically, for Freo.
Now it's time for our favourite time of the podcast.
Hello, Newman.
When you control the mail, you control information.
Josh's mailbag.
Thanks, guys. Thank you, Skeet and Quarters. And Duff as well, just checking who's in the room. Good emails this week, really strong from across the world. Where should I start? Oh, what about this one?
Give us the jet.
Right, thanks. Leith from Baldivis, but is riding from Mora. he asked for the sound effect to be inserted there.
Duff's not happy.
I just don't think Leith's a very bogan name.
I think he's been worried about the stereotype that we're giving people who live in the outlying regions of our state.
But who said you guys are associating burnouts with bogans? Like burnouts.
So up in Gidgee, there's a little monument to the late great Peter Brock. There's a little statue in a little car park. The car park, there's just rubber marks everywhere.
Joshy.
So I'm just in support of you, Josh.
Oh, thank you very much. Okay, so. From Lee, thank you very much. Hi, Duff, Quarters, Josh and Mr. Reddings. If he bloody shows up on time.
Oh,
gee. Some of your slickest work, Josh. Just keep it coming, brother.
God, how did they get in here?
That is so bad.
Okay, Lee. He actually followed up you guys' very good point the other day. Firstly, in regards to the Dreamtime game, I took my two sons, 13 and 6, who haven't yet found a passion for watching live football, and one of their mates who has never been to a game. They absolutely loved every moment of the Dreamtime game. The atmosphere was brilliant, and I still thanked me the next day, and it only cost me $70. What an absolute win. Which brings me to my next point. I looked at this week's Eagles game on Sunday afternoon. Unfortunately, $60 for one ticket. You would think in a year where people are struggling to get crowds that they might drop the price. Also, what do you guys think about splitting the crowds at each derby? Split the stadium half and half rather than just one designated for one designated for the other. Half Dockers, half Eagles.
It sounds great in theory. In practice, given the clubs and the revenue and how that split, probably it's problematic. But in theory, it's got a great ring to it. I know there's a great feeling when you get into the Optus Stadium, like there was Saturday night, and you turn to your right, there's Richmond supporters, turn to your left, there's Essendon. It's a real mix, which I think we miss in WA Quarters because of your Victorian background. It's something you've become accustomed to growing up. We just haven't had that opportunity. So I love that. Derbies, I think they would have looked at it now if it was feasibly possible. But I think the financials, et cetera, for different clubs is a bit of a hurdle to overcome.
I don't reckon it's the financials, because if you did it the way you would have to do it, you would sell, every club would sell 10 home and away games, and then the derbies would be sold as an independent entity, and they'd be sold like finals. So you would up the value of the tickets, and basically you'd end up with 30,000 West Coast people in there, 30,000 Fremantle people in there. The game would make an absolute poultice, then the clubs would divide the money. So financially they'd probably come out in front. It would just, it would peeve the punters. So punters like to buy their memberships, whether it's an 11-game membership, which West Coast basically sell because they can sell the thing out, or whether they're 5 or 3-game memberships as well, which Fremantle sometimes sell. They want to sit next to the people they want to sit next to, and they want the derby to be part of their package. And so you'd run the risk of creating a bit of a revolt, but you would create a special event. I'd also think you would create an environment where it'd be good for the culture of WA footy, where right now our crowd behaviour is sometimes a bit ordinary. There's a lot of booing, and both clubs do it. I mean, West Coast are Olympic gold medalists at it, but Fremantle do it too. There's a lot of booing, a bit more than we see at other grounds, I think. You see booing at every ground, but a bit more here. And I think there's a bit of sort of like nan-nan-nan-airing going on between the punters. If you have to sit next to an opposition fan, it kind of moderates your behaviour a bit. I think it would be good for WA football culture, but I don't see it happening.
You know, we should be thankful, I suppose. I get your point about the crowds here, but we should be thankful, having been to EPL games in London, where you have the opposition come in and there's just a row of bobbies either side of them, and they're not allowed to leave the venue till an hour after the game. We should be thankful, I guess, we're not in their environment.
Yep, no question about that. I think you're right. Duff makes sense. Whether you would have thought that would have been explored before now, for whatever reason, it hasn't been.
Thank you very much for the email. Matt Haythorne-Waite from Vancouver. Firstly, and we've sort of addressed the other questions, but we'll get to this firstly. If you are going to the North American trip, need to have a spot, Vancouver. So we've got three destinations now, guys.
By the way, did get a message from, I won't read it out, but our friends in Kentucky did say thank you for the mention the other day, and we'll be, stay tuned, we're possibly getting them involved at some stage on the podcast.
Huge news. We've been talking about international. Ever since we had the first international mailbag, guys, we've started, you know, we're jet set. Sorry. So now, staying in Vancouver, firstly, any chance Freo can somehow snag Harry McKay, the dream full forward that they so desire?
Jeez, that's had a lot.
So my understanding is that Fremantle's is absolutely determined to stay with the draft, to draft, draft, draft and draft. They believe that trading has been bad for them. You've got to remember, and we talked about this the other day, the club that trades in usually loses on the deal. They can argue that they win because they get the quality player, but the other club gets the potential for more with the draft picks. And in 5 years' time, we may look at even Tom Lynch going to Richmond, and we may argue that Gold Coast came out in front on the deal. So I think there is – that's important for Fremantle to consider. They need a critical mass of talent, and the best way, the shortest way to do that is to maximise your presence in the draft.
Who'd they get for Lynch?
I can't remember. In fact, Lynch may have even been a free agent.
I think he was.
That's probably a nonsense argument. But the classic that springs to mind for West Australians is the Kennedy-Judd trade. So West Coast gets Chris Marston, Josh Kennedy and Tony Knott. Now, Tony Knott, what, he played 2 games. But Chris Marston played, did he play 200? Pretty close to 200.
Yep.
Played in their premiership. And Josh Kennedy is one of the all-time great power forwards, still playing. Chris Judd retired in 2014. So I think Carlton also got Dennis Armfield out of that. But Dennis Armfield obviously was a player you can probably find pretty much anywhere. No disrespect to Dennis, who was did his best to be the best AFL player he could be. It just seems to me that the club that loses the player, they don't want to lose them, but they end up winning on the deal.
And off the back of that, I think trades bring a sugar hit for fans, and that, you know, can be a trap for clubs. And I understand some going down that path. I mean, but there's been, Richmond's been very good at it, obviously. Premierships then validate.
Once the window, the window is open, but long term it probably doesn't. But,
no. But you take a couple of flags.
If you're in the window.
Absolutely.
And it gets you over the line in one or two more, which Lynch, there's no doubt he's helped them.
Big win.
then it's a yes. But what the long term, you got to weigh it up.
But I agree, if that's a philosophy for Freo going forward, draft, you're going to eventually get really good quality that's going to be the basis of your team for the next decade.
The other thing, this is a bit of a creepy one to throw into this.
Oh, creepy.
It's a line from Silence of the Lambs. How do you begin to covet? You covet what you see. Start looking in Western Australia, Fremantle.
Jeez.
Wow.
Whiz.
Tell you what, Josh is going to find some... Anthony Hopkins walks through the door and away we go. And Clarice. That's not a bad line though, Duff. You've been sitting on that for a while or not?
Excuse me while I just open a tin of fava beans.
And a nice Chianti.
Shivers. All right, guys, staying with Fremantle, we've got a couple more for Freo. We'll try and get through these before 55 minutes. Danny Doker from Dianella.
Jeez, that's a... Oh.
What are you...
You know what? He's juvenile and he's childish. Just ask the question.
Quartermain just keeled over in his own laughing his own joke.
Alliteration, is it?
No, it's alliteration gets me every time.
All right. I would be very interested to hear the three wise men plus Josh, the wisest of them all.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, really.
This is Josh.
Think about the Dockers' handling of Lloyd Meek's development going forward. I think Meek has great potential as a ruck forward and will only really develop if he gets a run at the next level. He's certainly above the waffle level. I think he and Sean could work well as a tandem like Gaunt and Jackson over time. If the Dockers don't provide Meek with opportunities, then will a club like Geelong or potentially another Victorian club, as he is Victorian, come a knocking? So his point is, my answer to this dilemma is that Darcy and Meek for the last half of the season should make the ruck duo and get rid of Rory Lobb and make him fight for a spot in the forward line alongside Tabana and Josh Tracy and only put back into the ruck if our two options fall short. He goes on for a bit, but what do you guys think about that?
What do you think about... I mean, look, they did play together at stages earlier this season and Lloyd serviceable. Darcy, though, has been the standout, pushing forward, kicking goals in that sense. So he looks to me the more likely ruckman to be able to provide that double-pronged avenue to goal. As for Rory Lobb, look, against Sydney, terrific. Not much happened last week against the Bulldogs, but given Tabana unlikely to play this week or hasn't been playing, I think you need him in there because he has got quality.
He can mark it. We don't see enough of it, but he can.
You need it. Well, you have to. You always have to play him.
He's a good contestant.
You're obliged to play him.
I know. We're in dispute on this one.
No, we're not. I fully acknowledge that Rory Lobb's best is very good, and we saw that against Sydney, and we saw what Rory Lobb can be. But he's not all he can be very often, and I still think he's in their best 22 because 206 centimetres can catch it, pretty mobile, can take a turn in the ruck. That's your forward ruck. I think we saw Meek and Darcy go as the ruck-forward-ruck combination. They actually ended up sending Darcy forward more because he was more likely to catch it and kick a goal.
Yep.
I think he kicked three against Hawthorn earlier in the season. We may see it again this weekend. If Tabana doesn't get up, and because they're a bit short, they may play Meek and... Well, actually, Darcy probably won't play, will they? We probably won't see it this weekend. But we may see Lloyd Meek back in the team. It's a hard one for ruckman, isn't it? And they often thrive at their second club. So Toby Nankervis starts at Sydney, thrives at Richmond. Shane Mumford went from Geelong to Sydney to GWS. You see them shift around a bit. Stephen Martin went from Melbourne to Brisbane, back at Bulldogs now. Because there's only really one spot at every club and maybe a forward ruck backup, ruckman, once they know they can play at AFL level, they're looking for an AFL club that's prepared to play them.
Great question. And we'll stay with Fremantle for this one. Also, Tom Hickey thriving in his fourth club. Let's go with Chris from Booragoon. I know, that's Perth, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do Fremantle run the risk of another 2-3 year stint in development to push for finals? I feel the massive injury toll to certain players is preventing growth. It's e.g. Sturt, Chapman and Young. Also, the mid-forward connection is doing my head in. With the small, slow ball movement being very predictable. The only players that can hit targets inside 50 are Mundy and Chera, who are no certainty of being there next year.
It does make a difference, Quarters.
Yeah.
When you're looking at the game at the ground, and then there was an incident last weekend where David Mundy had the ball in the centre square. They were kicking to the left of the broadcast centre, and he gave it off to Akers, who kicked inside 50, and it fell at the feet, I think, of Weston. Was it Weston? Of the Dockers forward. Now,
you mean Henry?
Henry. If David Mundy
would have been good to spot Joel Weston in there.
Would have been a very good effort. But Mundy with ball in hand, I just thought he's the guy that has to deliver inside 50. Why give it off to somebody and not?
No, if you're a Freo forward, you're hoping it's coming out of there. It's either Chera or Mundy with the ball in there.
You know, the kick of the weekend was Chera finding lob, where he was running down the flank on his non-preferred, came back inside the traffic, then threaded the ball through traffic and found lob in 10 metres of space right out the back of the traffic, and Rory went back and kicked it out on the full.
But the point is
from 15 metres out on a slight angle.
The point, though, is
he's not the Lone Ranger either.
The field kicking from players outside of Chera and Mundy, there's a bit of a gulf there. In fact, there's a massive gulf for, if you look at the entirety of that list, there's a real issue with getting ball from
mid-forward connection.
The flip side of this, though, guys, is that against the Dogs last week, what, they kicked 9-15, I think? Was it 9-15?
Close enough.
And there were two or three out on the fulls, correct, as well?
Yep.
Which there always are at Fremantle, there's always two or three out on the fulls. So, therefore, that's about 26, 27 shots on goal. Now, if you kick 15-11, you win the game.
Mm.
So, and most home games this year, they've generated 25 to 30 shots on goal, which is plenty to win the game. They just haven't kicked enough of them.
But are they kicking them from, and I don't know the percentages, are they kicking them from the boundary? Are they pushed wide? Are they getting those central looks?
They're still missing too many from those central looks. And that's, we had this conversation last week, but back to my bugbear about forward spending more time honing that craft. That's what they need to do, because kicks like Chera's deserve to be rewarded on the other end.
We agree.
Final one, guys. We'll get through it quickly because it's up to that 55-minute mark. Andrew Vitalens, long-time supporter of the podcast. If need be, can WA help the AFL with three games every weekend? And what do you think is the best schedule for these fixtures to allow the maximum crowd?
During COVID times, I'm guessing.
During outbreaks or
yeah.
Well, we would love it over here, and maybe even a hub here to help them get the season through, but hubs are their last resort. It's a long flight over here, so they will probably default to the localities that are closest to them, even if it means
in a hub,
smaller crowds.
Still only 4 hours.
Yeah, well,
it's not a long flight.
History says they won't be doing it, doesn't it?
And I think Gillon McLachlan's put it on the record that hubs are the last priority.
Well, they've told the AFL Players Association it is the last absolute. It will be the last choice for them, will be hubs.
Yeah. So, look, I think it was great to have the extra footy over the past couple of weeks. We've got a doubleheader this weekend, which is a rarity. But I think it's going to be tough to engineer that for the rest of this season. But as we said last week, if there's a way that we can get a marquee game here.
There's our faith healer again.
Yeah, no. Duff doesn't know the meaning of silence.
That's two slabs, by the way.
More footy here, the better. But maybe
Swan-thank stuff.
Cherry pick those marquee games that we can look at down the track. I think the Dreamtime game we'll always refer to as the one which showed the rest of the country, particularly the AFL, what can be done if we're given the opportunity.
Agree.
Yeah, I agree. One of the interesting things I reckon is if things go back to normal eventually, whether there is scope for us to get 3, 4, 5 games that, you know, the overload of the Melbourne market, if you like, if we ease that, can we get enough people interested to make that a going concern, to make it financially viable for those clubs and make it a great extra thing for fans in Western Australia? That would be something to be looked at, but I don't necessarily know it's the right answer.
No, I don't think Victorian clubs a la Carlton would like to play, say, the Eagles, which they gave up that chance to make some money last week and they lost anyway. So
you need a market, you need a big club.
True.
You need, that's the only way it can work, as was proven last week.
Yep, agree. All right, thank you very much for joining us today. We'll be back on Tuesday to run the ruler over the round. We've been brought to you by Tab Touch. You can get closer to the AFL action with Tab Touch. Please gamble responsibly. Please call the Gambler's Helpline on 1800 858 858 if you run into any difficulties. Thank you, Skeet. Thank you, Quarters. Thank you, Josh. And thanks to all our listeners.
If you're a fan of the podcast, why don't you send a message to Josh's mailbag? Have you figured out how to fix footy? Are you trying to settle a debate with a mate? Or maybe you just want two of Australia's most experienced footy journalists to turn their attention to an AFL issue of the week. Send to the mailbag at josh.garlep, that's G-A-R-L-E-P-P, at wanews.com.au. And also remember to like, subscribe, and of course, tell your mates so we can make this as big and as good as possible. Thanks for listening.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast on the game.
You know who? It's unbelievable.